20 minutes after 5 o'clock here on Downtown on your Wednesday afternoon. Rich Kimball here along with Carrie Haskell and Bruce Pratt. Our next guest on the program appeared as Miss Stephanie Vanderkellen on 7 seasons of Newhart, where she was nominated for an Emmy Award every single season. It's also appeared, of course, on Designing Women, episodes of Key and Peele, Shameless, Scream Queens, in film, on stage as well, and she's the author of a terrific new book called Bad Auditions. Julia Duffy joins us. Julia, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, I'm glad to be here, and it was so nice to hear that music.
I thought you would enjoy that. Yeah, the book is terrific. I work with high school theater students, and I think about all the times that the kids who are getting ready for a college audition have come to me and said, yeah, what should I do? What should I go with? And this book is going to be such a valuable resource to them, but even to people who have been in the business a long time. And I love what you say early in the book, which is that when you audition, don't think of it as an audition, but you have that role for those moments you're in that room.
Yes. Well, actually, I think that was the casting person, Elaine Aldaffer from Playwrights Horizons in New York. And she said, it's your job for 10 minutes. You've got the job. And it's a great way to look at it. And she's a particularly fantastic casting person.
Now, you've had some bad auditions, and we'll talk about one or two of those along the way.
Yes.
But I love some of the tips that you provide. And one is, and it's very useful, and you learned it yourself, it's important to rehearse a scene more than one way before your audition.
Yes, because you never know what they're going to throw at you. And especially if you particularly love the role and are inspired by it, you're probably going to have a very strong feeling about how it should be done. And then to have something else thrown at you is very hard because you will be married to your opinion. But that's part of the job, is to be flexible and to look at it different ways. For me, that was one of the hardest things always, was if I went in with such a strong take on it, to then be told to do something different because I was attached to my feeling about it. But it's important to be able to do that.
And important to be flexible in case, well, I don't know, the scene partner you're working with decides to block the camera in the middle of your audition.
Yes, well, I won't say who that actor was. There might be enough hints there that you can figure it out. And he's a delightful actor, but he had no idea. He stood right in front of the camera. And I was completely blocked, so my audition was never really seen.
The waiting room, you refer to it as purgatory. You've made some friends there. You talk about how you see a lot of familiar faces. What's the best way to comport yourself in that waiting room?
Well, most people are very much in their own bubble in a waiting room. It's the way to be, unless you're reading for something that's really not terribly taxing. Most people are very professional, and they will go stand in a corner by themselves and maybe greet each other, but not too much. I do have waiting room relationships with some actresses who are lovely and wonderful, and they are definitely stiff competition. And I think we all have a certain admiration for each other at this point that we're still standing.
We're talking with Julia Duffy on Downtown, and you talk about the preconceived notions that casting directors have, and often it depends on a look or how they perceive you as an actor. But you also say in the book that it's important to let go of your own preconceived notions about your own type.
Yes, because it can really limit you, and it's understandable that you will have those notions because of the way people react to you repeatedly and the way they cast you repeatedly, and you will begin to think that really you're not going to fit this or that role because they must be looking for a different type, because, you know, I'll say to myself, well, I never get this kind of role. But you just never know. That every now and then they will do something creative in their casting, and so it's very important to let go of that if you can, to see yourself in a broader way if possible.
Julia, how do you walk that fine line and keep the balance between being enthusiastic without being needy?
Well, I think I got past being needy a long time ago, but when you're young, you are needy. I mean, it's sort of hard to just pretend you're not needy, because you are, and you have every right to be needy. You have every right to really want the role, really need the role. If you're a young person starting out, that's just fine. You don't have to hide that as much as you might think you do.
You really, in the book, made me want to read The Party by Jane Arden. That sounds like a wonderful, not only a wonderful audition piece, but a wonderful play.
It's a wonderful play. I'm still very upset, although I'm way past being able to play the ingenue. I've tried to get it done repeatedly. I would love to see it done. But it has sort of a difficult subject matter, and I don't know why. I wasn't able to get a production done, and I don't even know if you can find a copy of it anymore. I may own the only ones in existence in this country, but it is a very worthy play. But things like that come along, and you fall in love with them, and you never forget them, and you never get a chance to do them. But they're good for you as an actor. You've fallen in love with something, you've felt something about a character, and you will wind up transferring that to some other job, some other work.
Julia, you write about the audition for Lou Grant, a part that you ultimately got, and that was in many ways a career-changing event for you because you formed some great relationships there with people at MTM, but also because they saw you as somebody that could do comedy as well as drama.
Yes, I think at first people thought of me as a dramatic actress because I think I looked more that type or something. I'm not really sure. But people do tend to make that distinction very strongly. And really, truly, half the town thought I was a dramatic actress and the other half thought I was a comedic actress for a while. But every now and then you get an opportunity to show a particular casting person that you can do both, and that's very helpful then. But they have to see it. They can't imagine it. They have to see it. And first impressions do last a long time.
Well, that MTM audition opened some doors, including the opportunity to do Newhart. We had Bill Sanderson on the show a few months ago, and my gosh, I think of that group you had with Bill, with his brothers on the show, Tom Poston, Peter Scolari, Mary Fran, and of course, Bob Newhart. What an incredible ensemble to work with.
Oh, it was amazing. And then to have Rickles hanging around, you don't get a job like that but once in a lifetime. It was so much fun, and all we did was laugh all day long and got paid. I mean, it was an amazing job. It really was. I could have done it for the rest of my life.
Well, and it seems like Bob Newhart is that wonderful gem that you look for in acting, and that's somebody who is very generous and is happy to give co-stars their opportunity to get the laughs.
Oh, yes. He is very wise. He knew what his place was. He knew that his reactions were what made things funny, and he had to have funny people to react to. He completely got it. As far as comedy goes, there's nothing that he would ever miss, and whatever was best for the comedy is what he did. And he also knew that if you weren't having fun, there was no point in trying to make comedy. And not everyone feels that way. Not every set is that happy. But he was right, and I could not have been luckier.
The character of Stephanie was, I think it's safe to say, self-centered, a bit entitled, and yet we still pulled for her to find happiness. How do you do that as an actor? How do you make us love that character that doesn't have the most lovable traits?
Well, I think you have to think of someone like that as rather innocent about the way they're being. They don't have any malice, really. It's just, it was all Stephanie knew. She didn't know anything else. And she sort of pitied people who weren't as lucky as she was, and I thought it was hilarious that she thought that she was, because she'd been raised to believe that she was so incredibly beautiful and special, and so she just assumed that was true, and kind of felt sorry for people who weren't as wonderful as she is, and I just don't think you can really hate someone who comes to it that innocently.
When you were making Newhart, did the members of the cast have the feeling that this was a show that would have tremendous legs, that people would still be watching happily and joyfully in reruns 25, 30 years later?
Yes, because it was very important to us and all of the writers on our show that our jokes would be funny 10 years, 20 years later. Oh, now we're past that even. but no one was interested in current humor. And when there was a joke that had something current about it, it was you know, people fretted over it because they knew that it was maybe a hard joke to skip over now because it was such a good joke, but it wasn't really what you wanted. You really wanted it to be funny later.
You also worked with another terrifically talented ensemble in a very memorable role as Stevie's mother in Shameless. What was that experience like?
Oh, well, that's like guerrilla filmmaking, that show. I didn't even know where the camera was most of the time. Usually you're aware of where the camera is and you try to play to it. But it was all handheld, and I'm sure you can tell by watching the show, and very unstructured in that way. And it was kind of wild. I mean, I really loved that about it. And also the kids on that show are so fantastic. My God, they hardly needed the adults. They were all just wonderful characters, such good actors.
You've done a tremendous amount of stage work through the years as well. Do you find that you get a different reward from that because of that immediacy of the live audience?
Well, it is. It's a very different kind of collaboration. And the rehearsal room, to me, is the most wonderful part of being an actor, to have 4 weeks to explore and to collaborate. And you have this feeling that is much harder to get on a set when people are only there for their scenes and then they leave. But that feeling that you're all trying to make something that's much greater than any one of you, and you're all trying for the same thing, and you're all listening to the same audience and listening if this is working. And that collaborative feeling, to me, is the absolute best. Whenever I do a play and it's time to leave the rehearsal room and start tech and go to the stage, I have so much trouble leaving that rehearsal room. It's such a pull for me. I feel like I just want to rehearse it forever. Do we have to do it in front of an audience? but then that becomes its own thing. But that's such an odd adjustment from that small, little, intimate collaboration to then doing it on the stage.
It's so interesting. Stephen Tobolowsky comes on our show quite a bit, and he talks about the rehearsal room as one of those sacred places because that's where you feel loved and protected and you feel safe. And it is so hard to leave that when you've done so much powerful work as a group together.
Yeah, it really is. It's amazing, that feeling, every time. And if you ever aren't sad to leave the rehearsal room, then that hasn't maybe been a terrific process if you're not sad.
Julia Duffy is with us here on Downtown. The book is called Bad Auditions. What prompted you to share not just your stories of both good and bad auditions, but offer this book as a guidebook for people not just getting into the business, but people who've been in it for a while and want to make that process a bit more fulfilling?
Well, somehow I came up with the idea a few years ago, and you don't want to waste your wisdom. If you've been doing anything for a long time, you're going to have some wisdom about it. And I think in any walk of life, any occupation, you sort of want to pass that on. And you don't want to just waste it. You want to have it useful to someone. And I did have that general kind of feeling. And then the title came to me, and I thought, well, that would be kind of a funny way to do it. I'll just humiliate myself and tell all the terrible things I did wrong, and then it'll help people avoid those traps, and it'll be a framework around which to try to instruct a little bit from what I've learned. But when I started to write it, I thought, well, it's getting repetitive after I wrote it, two or three of them. It's just going to be the same thing, I thought to myself. So I dropped it. And then about a year and a half ago, it was pilot season, which, oh my God, it's like Groundhog Day. Every day I'm reading for a different kind of bad mother at this age. And I don't like it. I don't like that time of year when I'm doing the same thing all the time. But don't get me started on how people write mothers. But anyway, I thought I had to do something to keep my sanity during this pilot season. And so I started to, since I was in the throes of the worst kind of auditioning, which is pilot season, I would start to write more. And I did realize that truism that when you just sit down to write, you will find that you have something to write. You have to do that every day. And I discovered that. And I knew that I had some ability to write. And so I just made myself sit down and start writing. And so it's a very tiny book. but I never wanted it to be long because I wanted it to have the feeling of, if I came into your student's class, your theater student's class, and gave them a lecture for an hour, I wanted it to have that feeling where I summed it up in a short period of time.
You talked about the book being a way to sort of pass on some of the lessons that you've learned. Were there a couple of people when you were first starting out that served that purpose for you, that sort of gave you some of the lessons that you're hoping to pass on to the next generation of actors?
Well, there were. Sometimes it was just the people I was competing with. And I could observe their demeanor. And I would always look and see who got the part when I didn't get the part, because I wondered what they were looking for that I didn't bring and that that person brought. And that was the most instructive thing of all. Because if you're being honest with yourself, most of the time, you can see why that person got the part. If you can get over your bitterness or your pissiness and take a look at who got the part and watch their performance, you will understand how it came to be. And you will also understand what you have that you would have brought to the part that they didn't, even if they were a very obvious choice and did a good job. You still will feel, yeah, but I didn't have that I would have brought. And you'll get to know yourself, I think, a little bit better and what it is you bring to it. I really found that more instructive than almost anything else.
I thought it was a really interesting comment you make in the book that when you get praise at an audition, it's important to remember that praise is about the script. It's about the work and not so much about you.
That's right. You have to think the same way about praise as about criticism. You're talking about the work. And even though you're really using yourself a lot in this line of work, you still have to sort of separate from it. You just have to. If you were an artist, you would step back and you would look at the picture and you would think about what you had to do. And you wouldn't take it personally if somebody told you that this color was wrong or this could be better. And you really have to approach it the same way. It's the best thing to do.
While your book really deals with acting specifically, as someone that has never really done any theater except a couple of, you know, quick college classes, there's a lot in there that translates to other fields. You know, being prepared, being confident, know your strengths, and that all translates beyond just the field of acting.
That's what the publisher said when she said she wanted to publish the book. She said everybody can keep learning and everybody can learn from mistakes. You have to humble yourself a little bit and get a little bit calculating about what you're going to do next time. I think it's true in any business where you have to keep making an impression of some sort or the challenges keep coming.
When you deal with rejection, and everybody who auditions in any artistic endeavor or writer or whatever deals with rejection, do you have advice for people who are going to get a lot of rejection early on as how to best deal with that? Because if you can't deal with it, obviously you can't make it.
Well, I wouldn't think of it as rejection, first of all. I wouldn't compare it to a writer having their manuscript rejected because there are so many factors. You might have given an audition that they will never forget, but they really did need the girl to be taller or thinner or something. I mean, there's a lot of factors that go into casting, especially in film and TV, because it's a visual medium, and you can't really forget that. That matters. And sometimes the impression the character makes has to be made instantly. The person has to embody it completely, physically. So it isn't necessarily that you're being rejected. It's that you couldn't be cast because you just didn't have this or that they found necessary for telling the story.
Julia, I remember the episode of Lou Grant that you were on. Do you ever find yourself at the television?
Do?
I do, yeah. I still am a huge Lou Grant fan. Do you ever find yourself with the television on and not Newhart, but a one-time appearance that you made on a show comes up and you you either look at it and say, oh, God, I don't want to watch this. Or do you say, I forgot I did that. Well, wow, that was an interesting choice I made that time.
No, most of the time I watch British TV, so that doesn't really happen to me very often. My husband and I just love British TV, and so we've become like these expats when in our viewing habits.
Your husband, by the way, and I didn't know this until doing a little research, and very, very talented actor himself, Jerry Lacy, who was in one of my favorite movies of all time, where he played, of course, an unbelievable role in Play It Again, Sam, as Humphrey Bogart, but he's had a tremendously successful career as well.
Yes, he's had quite a varied career, and he writes also. He's written some plays, and he's had a couple of small productions and would like to have more. So he's one of those people that does a lot of different things. I wrote one thing. Other than that, I'm pretty much a one-trick pony.
The book is called Bad Auditions. You can pre-order it right now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and I believe I saw it's shipping at the end of September.
Apparently it ships September 30th.
Fantastic. Well, it's a wonderful read. Anybody should get it if you're interested in acting, but it goes, as we mentioned, beyond that. It's great advice for success in life. Julia, we're big fans of your work. It's been a delight for us to talk with you. We wish you much success, both with the book and with your acting career. Thanks so much for being with us.
Well, thank you so much, and thanks for reading it.
Absolutely. We'll hope to talk with you again soon. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Bye-bye.
It's Julia Duffy on Downtown. Bad Auditions is the book.